When I was teaching parenting, I found out that some of the most extraordinary things about the direction our lives take has to do with inherited proclivities.
Unconventional Life, the show where I interview successful entrepreneurs, artists, creators, and thought leaders on how they earn their living in non-traditional ways. We will explore how they took the path less traveled, what their revenue model looks like, and why they are prioritizing their passion over their paycheck. I'm your host, Joel Schroeder.
Unconventional Life, welcome. This is your host, Joel Schroeder, tuning in today from Nederland, Colorado. Today's guest is joining me from upstate New York. I have got Susan Slotnick in the house. Susan, are you ready to take us down the path less traveled?
Absolutely.
Really excited to have this woman on the show. She is very much a Renaissance woman. I know you've done so many different things. You're a visual artist, a choreographer, a dancer, writer, social justice volunteer. I also know that you are a Cannes and Harlem Film Festival first prize winner. You've had your work published in so many different, you know, publications and things like that. And for the last, you know, 16 years, you've gone behind the walls at the Woodburn Correctional Facility and the youth prison every Friday and Sunday to bring the joy of modern dance to incarcerated men and boys, you know, under the RTA Rehabilitation Through the Arts program. And just your way that you've gone, done this volunteer work to really bring dance and ultimately inspiration into so many different, you know, places that would ordinarily not have it. Such a pioneer in the realm of social justice. And I also know that you're a columnist, you know, at one of the papers there in New York. You write a big column on that. You're an author, Unconventional Lifers. We're going to talk about her book a little bit later on in the show. And now recently, you know, you're a new grandmother to two beautiful babies that your daughters just had. And we were just catching up before the show and we were talking and you've gotten your 10,000 steps in a day. That's been a big practice. Recently, the 25,000 steps in Unconventional Lifers. She's been eating the same breakfast for 50 years. We're going to talk about that at how, 76 years old, you are doing what you're doing, which is so inspiring. So welcome to the show, Susan. Fill in any gaps that I might've left out and give us a glimpse into your day-to-day life.
My day-to-day life. Well, most of life is ordinary. Most of the way we spend our time is in ordinary activities. And if we don't find those activities extraordinary, we're going to feel that our lives are a little bit dull or a little bit boring. So a good deal of my morning is spent making sure that all my 85 paintings that are hanging on the wall in this house, that the surrounding area is clean so the paintings really pop. And then, as you mentioned, I've had the same breakfast for 50 years because many years ago I got involved in what's called the natural hygiene movement. And at that point, what I would have for breakfast was blended raw vegetables with a little garlic and a little lemon and a little olive oil. And for some people, that sounds disgusting. But then I would put a big tablespoon of brewer's yeast in it. And then I would do my 5-mile walk, which I do every single day. So the day is spent, I would say, half in very ordinary pursuits. And then often in the afternoon, I'll write or I'll paint or I'll watch trash TV. That's a nice thing to be able to do occasionally. And just see that there's sacredness and beauty in the entire thing.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, you know, so many of us were always, especially with the stimulation of screens and media and all of this noise, that it can be this, you know, shiny object. How do I move to the next thing? Or I'll be happy when, or I'll be content when, versus, like you said, finding the extraordinary in the ordinary. And what started that shift for you, which I imagine there's definitely been some years, you know, of wisdom that really brought you there. And especially for some of the listeners now that really are challenged by finding their flow, finding their practice, finding the sacred in the mundane. What are some of the things that have really worked for you in developing that relationship for yourself? And give us a, you know, bird's eye view. If we were a fly on the wall, how would we have seen the progression of Susan, you know, through the years? What were some of those inflection moments that really shaped the mindset and the framework that you have today?
Wow, what a question. Well, I'm gonna start by telling you that that I taught, besides teaching dance in the prisons, I taught healthy relationships, I taught parenting, and I taught mindfulness. And my interest in social justice, I think, was heritable. when I was teaching parenting, I found out that some of the most extraordinary things about the direction our lives take has to do with inherited proclivities. And I can't remember a time, even as a child, when I didn't have this strong desire to do something to heal the world. In my tradition, which is Judaism, healing the world is even more important than believing in God. So what started me off as early as I can remember is seeing the way Blacks were treated in my junior high school in 1958. And what happened to the Black students were they were told that they would never get into college because they were Black. This is the North now. And so they were completely unmotivated to do their schoolwork. Why should they? They were told they wouldn't go anywhere. And I was completely unmotivated by the fact that I had a very challenging childhood with a mentally ill mother and an autistic savant father. I don't know how many people can say that sentence. Probably not too many. But I'd love to hear from somebody who had that exact experience. But nevertheless, I wasn't doing well either in my youth. So I started cutting school at a very early age and going to the projects with the Black students. And that gave me my first real indication of injustice. And then in high school, which I flunked out of, by the way, it's all in my book, I started to read everything about the Holocaust in Germany from A to Z in the White Plains Library. By the time I flunked out of high school, I had read maybe 50 books, both fiction and historical. Wow. And then my course was set for life. I knew exactly what how I wanted to use my talents. And I'm going to digress for a second and say, yes, I'm multi-talented, and it's extraordinary to me that I can paint and that I can write and that I can choreograph and that I'm actually done a lot of public speaking and teaching. However, nothing that you have in life in terms of talents can you claim. They are birth accidents. Talent was thrown up in the air and a lot landed on a particular person or very little. It's like having blue eyes. What I'm the most proud of in terms of taking the road less traveled is the direction that I put all my talents to. I did not have to become a choreographer in a prison. I did not have to write about politics, trying to have people start to think more about what's going on in the world. Many of my choreographic pieces had very deep philosophical meanings. And I certainly did not have to teach children in schools how to pay attention using dance, which was a program I invented. So all of the talents I wanted to direct towards an end that would fulfill my childhood dream as a little Jewish girl growing up in a privileged environment, but with emotionally unprivileged conditions, I chose to do that. And that's what I feel is my main accomplishment, the path that I took with my talents to do something unconventional. Now, I could go on because a lot happened after high school, but it was a very broad question. So I'm gonna see what your next question is.
Yeah, well, Susan, what a story and just a reflective moment. And one of the reasons I love this show is just, I think we get so much permission when we see ourselves in the story of someone else, even if it's just pieces of, and I completely agree with you, the realm of choice. You know, to actually choose and to say, this is circumstance, or this is what I've got, or this is what I didn't get, and this is how it's been or how it hasn't been. And here's what I'm going to say in the face of it. And I know you've had such a, you know, example of that throughout your life. And I know a lot of your life was spent in these correctional facilities. And, you know, what was it about being in that work where I'm sure you had people in your life that were like, why are you doing this? Like, why are you feeling compelled to spend all your time in prisons or wherever it might be? I think so many people who hear this show, they get that. Why are you doing that? That does not make logical sense. What is in it for you? And yet I imagine there was something, there was a call, there was a knowing, there was a choice that you made. And tell us a little bit about that relationship and the dedication to that work and the pursuit of that.
Many, many years ago, when I was an 18-year-old girl growing up in Westchester, New York, and flunking out of high school, I got into a car with a boy that was a known bad boy. There was no such thing as date rape then, and there was no such thing, if there had been such a thing, as not blaming the female completely for her choice. So I was raped. And when I came home, I was so sad because I lost my virginity that way. And I decided that I would spend the night dancing, because I always danced for as long as I can remember whenever I was overwhelmed with any strong emotion, either sadness or fear or joy. And I stayed up a good part of the night, most of the night, dancing. And the next morning, I felt healed. I was able to move on. Now, years later, studies have been done with doing beautiful, controlled, luscious movement to beautiful music, mm-hmm. changes brain chemistry and actually stimulates the feel-good muscles in the brain. So my feeling better the next morning had a scientific base. But as a result of that experience, I always asked myself the question, where can that kind of healing take place for people? Where can people experience the freedom of movement? And as soon as I put the word freedom in it, I thought of incarcerated populations and how freeing dance was. But at the beginning, nobody would allow me to do it. I tried to get into prisons. They thought I was crazy. The powers that be in the facilities would not let me do it. And due to one person's forward thinking, I was able to get into the boys' prison and start to teach dance. And it took off beyond what anybody can imagine. The boys used to tell me, because the stage was small, so we were only allowed to have 20 students. And the boys would tell me there was a waiting list, and people said they would wash the gym floor with a toothpaste to get into the dance program. So it was shocking how well it was received. And then at one point, yeah. It's all in my book, I was kicked out of the boys' prison because I'm a bit of a renegade and I did something. It's actually a very funny story. And then I tried to get into a men's prison, which was mired with difficulties, all in my book. It's such a long story, Jules. I would have to talk for 40 minutes straight just to talk about how I got into the men's prison. And then I stayed there for a long time. And it was the same population. It was just the boys' prison, but grown. It was primarily African Americans, primarily from urban areas, very much victims. You know, most people in prison are perpetrators, maybe, but victims mostly. So they've all had mitigating circumstances for being there. Not that they shouldn't be there. They should be there. And they need to take responsibility for their own actions. But this particular population of young men had the same exact demographics as the men that I wound up teaching for, I think it was 12 or 13 years more in Woodburn Correctional.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, what a moment, you know, just even going back to the story of like getting in the car with that boy, undergoing, you know, the sexual trauma, and then the natural instinct to dance, you know, which for so many of us, I've been in, you know, many sexual trauma situations before. And I would say a lot of women, you know, for better or for worse, mostly for worse, you know, it's been a very common thing, both talked about and not talked about, and then choose, you know, to let movement and this natural instinct to move through you to then later understand the scientificness of, you know, the feel good muscle and all those things. And for, you know, just to talk about dance for a second and the power of what dance is, and particularly the practice of dance. You know, I even think back to like grade school or high school where it's like, oh, I can't dance. Or even I have, you know, friends of mine, like, I don't dance. And I personally have experienced so much power of dance. We do these unconventional life retreats. We've brought in, you know, a lot of different types of movements and stuff. But for someone who isn't familiar with the practice of dance, what would you say, or what is a practice someone can start engaging with? And give us just a little bit about, you know, the power of dance and how they could start incorporating that into their life.
Okay. Do you know what a human universal is?
I don't.
Okay, a human universal is what has been true for every single culture everywhere since the beginning of time. And there is a compiled list made by probably neuroscientists and evolutionary biologists. For example, toys. Toys of one kind or another are a human universal. Tickling is a human universal. Dance is a human universal. So when somebody says they don't dance, maybe that particular person doesn't dance. Maybe they have some ideas about it, or we're told. Unfortunately, we believe what is told to us between the ages of zero and basically until we figure out who we are, which could be forever or happen in college or happened at my age. But dance is a birthright. It belongs to the world. And it is in everybody to do. But you have to get all of your Western modernity ideas about what dance is out of the way to do it. Dance has been utilized in almost every society as to celebrate life cycle events, births, deaths, weddings. And unfortunately, moving in unison to music, which makes people feel when you're in a group and you're all doing the same movement at the same time, in unison, this has been utilized by armies throughout the world, marching young men into war by having them move in unison with each other to music. So even that, why is that? Why do all armies move in unison together to music? That's a dance. And it's a dance that makes people feel powerful and like nothing bad can happen to them. So it's interesting to look at historically the way movement has been used. And of course, there's always the question, which came first, the chicken or the egg? What came first, the music or the dance? And I have no idea. But I do know that it is an activity which, if you train as a dancer, which is what I did in my life and what I did for most of my life with other people, what makes dance particularly great is that you're using your three centers equally, which puts you in a flow situation, which puts you in the present and puts you in a different state of mind. Now, your three centers are your intellectual center. So to learn a dance, you have to remember the steps. And that's your intellectual center. Then you're using your emotional center because the arts are always emotional. They are always emotional. And you're expressing an emotion regardless of what the dance is about. And I've choreographed probably thousands at this point. Every dance had some kind of emotion connected to it. And then you're using your physical center because you're moving your body. And when these three centers are balanced in a person, you go into the present and you go into what some people might call a spiritual experience. I'm not crazy about that word, but a different kind of experience than what you experience just moving through your day, not to music, doing chores.
Yeah, absolutely. And Unconventional Lifers, we'll put Susan's website, you know, just to see some of the choreography and even the book and more of the stuff, you know, where you talk about that further. And I think there's so much to be said to it. It actually reminds me of one of your articles, just in terms of, you know, the history of where we've been and the way we've been wired. And I think you wrote this article, you know, I know you've been writing, you've been hundreds of calls, you know, in the New Pulse Times. And so you talked about just the evolutionary theorists, you know, how our brains are thousands of years behind the times. And even this practice of dance, which has been so, you know, ingrained, you know, in so many different ways, how we meet it modern sense, present tense. And just would love, you know, just to add, if you could speak a little bit to that perspective and particularly the brains and how, you know, even to extend beyond dance, how it's been wired and then how we are just navigating the world in real time.
Well, that's another very broad question, but I'll try to do the best I can. I'm not a scientist, so I'm only influenced by things that I have read or things that I have listened to. But from what I've read and what I've listened to, evolution is an incredibly slow process, but the way the world changes is an extremely fast process. For example, I went and bought a slice of pizza yesterday with my hubby, Sam, who I've been married to for 53 years. And that's an accomplishment, maybe my greatest accomplishment. And we went in and we got a slice of pizza and it was $3.75. We both remembered buying a slice of pizza for 25 cents. So the way the world changes in every conceivable way, the arts change, monetary things change, towns change, populations change, cultures within the same culture change. My daughters just had a baby and everything they told her to do was opposite of what they told me to do when I had those children. Now they all sleep on their back. When my kids were born, they were all sleeping on their stomach. So the world changes at an incredibly, almost terrifyingly rapid speed. And evolution, which is adapting to the world, is incredibly slow. So according to some theorists, we're about 200 years behind the times. So what does that mean? Well, I can give you an example. You talk about sexual violence. We now have this amazing period of time that we are starting to really look at sexual violence and how pervasive it is. And by the way, from the reading I've done recently, violence against women is the most extreme form of violence on the planet and affects the most number of people, including even wars. So we want to stop this. We want to stop sexual violence. But if people are still wired the way they were 200 years ago, then people have not adapted their libido or their sexual desires to meet the new world we're in right now. And so it's going to be a real pull to get people to do that. And you can apply this philosophy to almost anything. Population explosion. We don't need everybody having babies or wanting to have babies. But if we're wired up for 200 years ago, then the world needed to be populated. If people are still wired up for that in a world that is being strangled by too many people, this is another area where there's a lot of difference. There's a lot of lag. And I think this can be applied to almost anything. The way children learn, the way their brains function in school, is that working for today's learning styles, or would it have been better for learning styles many years ago? So that's why I wrote that piece, to have people look at that issue in their own lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And unconventional lifers, I know it's been a general question. There's so much more we could say. So definitely check out Susan on her website. We'll link that in our show notes. And, you know, Susan, just to transition a little bit, you know, as we mentioned, you are an author of an incredible book. You've also, you know, brought together The Game Changer, which took first prize at the Cannes and Harlem Film Festival. And unconventionally, we're going to talk about the book Flight, The Dance of Freedom in just a few minutes here. But tell us about the process of, you know, creating The Game Changer. What was the inspiration for that? And, you know, how is that piece still moving through you, you know, like in the world today, and how you see that piece now from when you first created it back in 2014?
Well, I didn't create The Game Changer. It was done by a filmmaker named Androni Koppel, who is from Malaysia. And it's another amazing serendipitous story. Now, I do want to say for your listeners, since this podcast is about taking a different path, I hope people will understand that primarily we don't choose the different path. The different path chooses us and we follow it. So I'm a person who in my formative years was a hippie. I went around the world in 1970 backpacking. I went to India, all of it, all of the 60s. I experienced that. And part of the 60s was not being interested in money, which I wasn't, and not at all being interested in making a mark in the outside world. It was all about making a mark in the inner world. So since that was my cultural influence and the influence of my generation, I did nothing in my life to promote myself. This podcast thing is the first thing I've ever done to promote myself, and it's extremely unfamiliar to me. So I was teaching dance in a prison. Nobody who wants to be well known goes and does their artwork in a prison where you sign pieces of paper saying you can't tell anybody about it publicly. You can't make money off of them. You can't write about them, or you lose your volunteer status, which I did when I published my book, because the book was more important. I'll explain why in a minute. But anyway, basically I lost my train of thought. what was your question again? Sometimes it's so hard with a general question because it encompasses such a large area that I can sometimes, if it's a very general question, sometimes can't lose my train of thought in the middle of it. Oh, I remember what it was.
Perfect.
I just remembered. And this does not have to be edited
quick,
out.
Editing.
Because I want everybody who loses their trend of thought to know I have compassion for them. So basically what it is things happen to you that change your path. So I'm on my computer and I see this beautiful woman in a sari who has friended me. And I'm sure it's like selling a sexual opportunity or something weird. I have no friends in common with her, but I didn't delete it. That lasted about 3 months. And then I said, okay, I'll just figure out who this is, because I'd been to India and I was curious. She was a filmmaker from Malaysia here on a Fulbright scholarship to make a film about a person, by the way, who took a path less traveled. And she did some research and somehow found me on the internet and asked me if I would be willing to have her make a short film about me for her Fulbright scholarship that she was involved in. And I always try to help young people. That's another area that I'm very strong in. So I said yes, and we didn't think either one of us the film was going anywhere. And then she submitted it to the Cannes Film Festival and it won first prize. And I could give you many examples where my path wasn't chosen. My path was followed. Yeah. And serendipity and coincidence and luck created what I did.
Wow. Well, and I think it ties in, beautifully in hearing that as well to your book. And I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about your book and Unconventional Anchors. We've got a great giveaway coming up in just a few minutes we're going to talk about as well. But tell us a little bit about, the book Flight, The Dance of Freedom. I know you published it in 2019 and share a little bit about that.
The book is really two sections that relate to each other. The first part of the book tells my life story completely in truth. What I went through as a child, what it was like growing up in a home with a very difficult, beyond difficult mother and an autistic father, what it was like growing up with this secret intellectual life that I had while flunking in school, what crime meant to me as a young person when I had interfaced with it in several different ways, and basically about my trip around the world, which completely changed my whole idea of what life is and what this planet is. But still in the first half, I relate, here's how I learned this, which I use later in the prison. The second half of the book is about my career and primarily about the men in the prison. I even tell some of their stories. And what I want to say about the second half of the book, as well as the first half, is that it's gotten ridiculously amazing reviews online. I read them and I look at it and I say, no, this can't be, because I never studied writing. But nevertheless, I think that the best comment that was made about the book and what I'm most proud of in terms of it being of use in the bigger world is that one woman who has been visiting a prison or a young man in Attica for 40 years said to me, this is the first book or movie or documentary or television show that I have ever read that tells you who they really are and what prisoners are really like. And I'm very proud of that. So I think that's a reason to read
absolutely.
The book. There are brilliant, talented people in prison full of heart. And there are people who should never get out. And usually with progressives, they are on one side of that on the other. But if you've been there for 15 years and you see the whole scope of it, including learning to have compassion for the people who work there, which took me a long time. And I eventually had compassion for the prison correction officers and for the administration. It is a book which will really tell people a question that I've been asked very often. What is it really like in prison? And I think this book answers it in a way that I believe has never been answered before.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Unconventional Lifers, definitely check that out. And Susan, what is the best place for people to check out the book? Is it through your website? Is it through Amazon? What would you recommend?
Well, it's my website. And if you go on the website, you can see the men dancing the first movement of Alvin Ailey's Revelations, which I re-choreographed for them. And if you see that on the website, it says more. The book is on there and the movie is on there in a very obvious way. But if you go to the icon that says more, you go to prison program, you'll see a link that says finally free. And you will actually see grown men inside the prison dancing with so much beauty and so much heart and so much tenderness that just that one film can tell you what my whole book tells you about them.
Yeah, Unconventional Lifers. I'm looking at the cover as we're talking right now. It's beautiful. Definitely go check that out. And Susan's website is Susan Slotnick, SLOTNICK.com. We'll put the links at unconventionallifeshow.com. And Susan, I know you've got a great giveaway for one of our listeners that's in line with this book. Tell us about the giveaway.
I'm going to send them the book.
Which is so great. So Unconventional Lifers, you can head over to the website if you want to be selected to win that giveaway at unconventionallifeshow.com and click on the giveaway tab. As a reminder, we keep it open for 1 week after the episode airs if you want to win that giveaway. And Susan, you know, lastly, my last question for you is, when you think about the unconventional life, all the things that you've done and all the things that you're still doing, what does living the unconventional life mean to you?
It's painful. Don't expect it to be easy. Don't expect you to be able to connect with the mainstream all the time, even when you want to. It can be lonely, but it's full of surprises. It's full of rarefied beauty, and it's full of meaning. But don't expect it to be easy or fun all the time.
Well said. Susan Slotnick, everyone. Susan, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today, to be on the show, to share about the work that you're doing. I'm super inspired by your story and also just, you know, your perspective. You know, I'm 32, so you definitely have some years on me. And it's, I think, beautiful to have conversations like this where we get to merge and just see the different points of view that we all come from. So it's so good to have you on the show today.